Welcome back to the Edge Show. Today we're going to be talking about failover clustering, high availability, and really focusing on what's new in the 2012 R2 release. So I'm joined today by my former boss, actually. So I used to be one of the guys on the cluster team, so he used to beat me up, made me do all these crazy designs, but now I just get to be an evangelist and talk to you about it. But I'm going to get the brain behind the cluster team here. Eldon, introduce yourself.
So my name is Eldon Christensen, and I'm a program manager. I'm actually the lead PM on the Windows Server failover cluster team.
Great. So let's talk about clustering all up. You know, we made a lot of investments here. It's always been about higher availability, better integration with our core workloads, SQL, Hyper-V, you know, across these areas. So we kind of continue with that in this release. But I think we really want to kind of drill down and focus on a few specific areas here, some specific improvements. First of all, validation. When people go set up a cluster, what have we done to improve that experience?
So we've done a couple changes here. Actually, being only 1 year release is a lot of very interesting things we're going to talk about here. Of only 1 year release, it's amazing how much we produced. Around Validate, so one of the customer feedback points we got around Validate was, so Validate verifies the inter-node communication between the nodes in the cluster. And what we did in the past was we did these simple pings. So we were just pinging to make sure that the...
It's the health check,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, kind of the... We were just doing this health, these pings between the nodes to make sure that inter-node communication and network connectivity was there. But that wouldn't catch is it wouldn't catch when if you had like a firewall misconfigured. So the scenario is the customer would run Validate, it would pass, then they would try to create a cluster and it would fail. And they'd be like, hey, what's going on here? You said this is supposed to work and it doesn't. So now what we've done is that we will actually use NetFT, which is our network driver for doing that. And what that really does is it verifies that port 3343, which is what we need, works, and TCP and UDP are working, which are what we need for inter-node communication to actually work.
Great.
So the short story of all that is that customers, when they run Validate, have a much higher guarantee that the system's going to work.
Okay, great. Now, one of the other things around setting up the clusters, a lot of people, I guess, you know, had a challenge was with the number of networks that were recommended in the past, especially if they had, you know, a Blade server that only had 4 networking cards. And so, you know, we had networks for pretty much every type of operations. There may be a backup network, a host deployment network, things like that. Are we still seeing this demand for network, or how are things with this 10 gig-y, you know, deployment changing things?
Yeah, so we're kind of rethinking how the old guidance was. We'd say put in a NIC for cluster communication, put in a NIC for external communication, put in a NIC for live migration, iSCSI, and that you didn't even have that many PCI slots that you could put that many NICs in the server. So we are embracing converged networking, and what that means is with 10 gig E, we are embracing doing multiple roles running on single interfaces. And now in 2012, we have network QoS features that can enable to do to define limits for different types of workloads. So you can actually restrict to make sure that like cluster heartbeating is prioritized, so it gets out with network QoS. You can do things like setting bandwidth restrictions, so that when you do these spike live migrations, that you don't have this burst traffic that can choke other traffic. So you can actually set QoS policies to restrict these things. So the short story is we are embracing converged networking now. We are simplifying our model on the number of NICs that you need. And actually, we have some guidance that's in the works. We have a white paper that's coming out very soon that's going to articulate kind of changing the way we think about our network recommendations.
Very nice. Now let's talk about storage configuration here. I guess more around storage interoperability. So we have cluster shared volumes, our distributed access file system for virtual machines. Mm-hmm. Now, this release, we wanted to make it, I guess, work better with file system drivers, backup, all of these other third-party mm-hmm. vendors. Can you talk a little more about our interop improvements?
Yeah, so we did a lot of interop with the way cluster shared volumes works, which is our clustered file system. Also internally, so there was a lot of features in that had a V1 come in Windows Server 2012, which weren't interoperable with cluster shared volumes. So for example, dedupe, you couldn't run dedupe on a cluster shared volume. That's something we've addressed in 2012 R2. You couldn't run a parity space. And now, so we have full interop with all these different features. So you can run dedupe, parity spaces, the new features. So you can do mirrored, you can do tiering, you can do write-back caching with spaces, now all fully interoperable with CSV. And we also have a full file system stack, so that these file system filters, antivirus, backup, have a place to inject themselves, so that they can be that they can monitor the flow of I/O on a CSV volume and have a good interoperability story. So we've really worked hard to improve this.
Very nice. Now let's talk a little more about just virtualization here. Now in the past, we've said, you know, you build a cluster, right? And whether you, whatever you're running on it, you can kind of build it the same way, but we're kind of rethinking that with virtualization now. How do we treat Hyper-V clusters differently in this release?
So we're really kind of looking at what clustering is used as a platform for the private cloud, as this distributed infrastructure, and we're tuning clustering to be optimized for those sorts of scenarios. So some of the things we're doing, for example, is that we've tuned the way heartbeating works. So internode communication and what are the thresholds before nodes should be considered down. And it really has to do with some workloads like SQL and Exchange to have tight consistency guarantees, and we don't necessarily have those with Hyper-V. So we're trying to make clustering work better with different specific scenarios. We've also tuned the way we do updates across the nodes in the cluster. So for example, a cluster is a synchronous distributed system. What that means is that the cluster can only move as fast as the slowest node. So if you have a node which is falling behind, maybe it's on a WAN link in a remote site, it's got some latency, it means that the cluster can move forward can only go as fast as that slow node. With Hyper-V cluster, you don't need that tight consistency. So what we've done is we've loosened things up so that we can now allow some of those, as long as we get a majority of nodes to acknowledge, we can move forward and allow some of those other nodes to catch up over time. And it works really well with Hyper-V. So it's about, we're tuning clustering to be really optimized to Hyper-V.
Very nice. Now, one of the other big virtualization investments people have been interested in is this concept of shared VHDX. Mm-hmm. And so you have a virtual cluster node, a second virtual cluster node, and now for shared storage, you could basically connect a VHDX file. Why are people going to use that? What's the big benefit for that?
That's actually probably our single most popular feature. So if we look at all the features that we're delivering in failover clustering in 2012 R2, shared VHDX is by far the thing that gets people the most excited. And what it's really about is, in 2012 R2, we really focused on cloud scenarios and hosted cloud and private cloud. So when you think about a hoster really doesn't want to expose their underlying storage topology up to a tenant virtual machine. So they want to have this layer of abstraction. So our guest clustering story in the past was that you would have to take a LUN, iSCSI LUN, and present it up to the virtual machine. And a hoster really doesn't want to do that. They don't want to take their SAN infrastructure and present it up directly. And so now with 2012 with a shared VHDX and 2012 R2 is that what you have this layer abstraction where you can have a VHD file and it can be abstracted from the storage and then up to the tenant VM. And now you can move that and it can be isolated from the underlying physical topology.
Nice. And just so we're clear with the topology, we have our two virtual nodes and the shared storage, the shared VHDX is where the application's data is stored on, right?
Yep.
That moves between the different nodes. Yeah, so rather than using a traditional SAN.
The real scenario that people really want to do it is around SQL. Okay. So people say, I want it for my SQL deployments, I want to have higher levels of availability. So even when they go to virtualization, they put SQL inside of a VM, they still want to use all those always-on SQL availability features for application monitoring. They want to monitor app health state of SQL and failover SQL across instances. And so that's what a guest cluster, the main scenario is around. You have SQL installed and you have your databases on the shared VHDX, and then the SQL instances will fail over and they can access the databases that are shared on a single common VHD.
Nice. Well, let's move on to the management now. I mean, we made a few improvements in the UI, the management. I see we have the screenshot up behind us as well, kind of showing our new Quorum. So what's new in the GUI and what's kind of changed in our Quorum model?
So in the GUI, we added one thing. This isn't as exciting and sexy because if you look at this, I only have one node in my cluster. So it's hard to show us, but we added a dashboard. So if you look at this, I've got a dashboard running here, and in my dashboard, I can quickly see the status of my cluster, right? So I can see, here's my cluster, it's up and running. I can see I have one whole running VM on this cluster.
Nice.
And this is the cluster.
Live production system.
This is the cluster under my desk. So it only has two nodes. But the really cool thing is that if you had 3, 4, 5, 10 clusters, you're gonna see them all here in the dashboard. And then you'll be able to see the status. So if it was down, and then you can quickly just click on it and it'll drill you right down in. So it's a nice way that if you got a Clue admin up on your desktop, you can quickly see the status of everything going on in your cluster. So let's talk about Quorum. The other thing that we've changed, shared VHDX, most popular feature. Mm-hmm. Second most popular feature of what we're delivering in 2012 R2 is around dynamic witness. So let me take a step back. So the Quorum of old and kind of how we've evolved over the last couple of years. So in 2008, 2008 R2, we quorum is what is a, so each node in a cluster gets a vote. Mm-hmm. And we need to have a majority of votes or quorum for the cluster to stay up. So let's imagine I had a 16 node cluster. I need to have at least greater than half. That would be 9 nodes. I had to do some math there. Sorry. I'm sick, so the brain isn't moving quite. It's kind of like I'm just jacked up on cold medications and brain's not moving fast. Okay, so I got 9 votes. I need 9 votes for the cluster to stay up. So the problem is that if I lose 8 nodes, right, the whole cluster goes down. Yep. And so a lot of people are like, well,
that seems like enough, right?
Yeah, well, but imagine a 64-node cluster. So I have a 64-node cluster and 32 nodes go down.
And we still shut down.
We still got 32 nodes and we shut down? It kind of seems silly, right, that we had 32 good nodes, still could run a lot of VMs on 32 mm-hmm. nodes, and we're going to shut the whole thing down. So we changed our definition of quorum. It used to be that quorum was a majority of total nodes in the cluster. And what we changed it to is the majority of nodes active in the cluster. So now if I have a 16-node cluster and I power down a node, instead of being a total of 16, now it's 17, so a majority of 17. 2 nodes, I power them down, now I got 15. Then a node crashes, now I got 14. So I need a majority of a 14 there would be, you know, 8. Ooh, that was another tough one. So I need a majority of 8 nodes up and running. And so we evolved. So a cluster can actually, a 64-node cluster can shrink all the way down to 1 node and stay up. So it's much more flexible than it used to be. We took that to the next level with witness. So the witness is a arbitrator or this external device, external entity, which could be a disk or a file share, which is we use to decide when nodes can't talk to each other, who should stay up and who should drop out.
So if I had like two nodes that couldn't speak to each other, we'd use that disk as that arbitrator.
Right, right. He would be the decision maker on who stays up and who shuts down. And so in the past, we used to have all these big, long docs about how to configure witness. And it'd be like, if you have an odd number of nodes, you probably don't want to witness.
I wrote that one. I
actually
wrote that white paper.
You did write that white paper.
I did write that white paper.
It was like, if you have an odd number of nodes, you don't want to witness. But if you have an even number, you do. And this crazy
flow
doc.
Shot, yeah.
Yeah, you had like this doc that it was like 20 pages long. And it was pretty crazy. So we decided we want to do better. So now what happens is that we will automatically detect the number of nodes in membership, which is dynamically changing as nodes are powering up and powering down and joining and leaving the cluster. And then we will change, lost connectivity. And then we will change whether the witness has a vote or not. So we will toggle the vote for the witness as the membership is changing.
Okay.
So what does all that mean? What does all that mean? Quorum is now simple in 2012 R2. Always configure a witness. Word clustering is going to figure out when the right time to use it is. So it's very simple. It used to be all these white papers and considerations mm-hmm. and guidance, and we do entire tech ed presentations on it. But now it's just always configure witness. We'll figure when the best time to use it is.
So let's say maybe I have 3 nodes in a cluster. We would have the witness disk, but that disk would not have a vote, right?
Yep.
I lose a node. Then we get that vote back.
Then we get that vote back.
Gain the node, vote goes away. So we always maintain that odd number of votes, and yep. we basically toggle in on that disk, on off, whether that contributes a vote.
Yep, and things are just dynamically changing as the environment changes around it.
Very nice. That's definitely going to simplify things. I mean, these large clusters, that's a great point, right? We lose half, no reason to shut down, keep things healthier, keep things running.
And that's what people love. That's why it's the second most popular feature, is because people are just like, oh, thank you. I don't have to worry about this anymore. I don't have to have big, long debates. It's just always configure witness, and it just works.
So. Nice. Very cool. Well, let's talk a little more about, shutting down nodes. You know, one challenge I heard from a lot of admins is, you have multiple admins using these really powerful hosts. One of them might not be the virtualization admin. They do something, they hit shut down, and it kills all these VMs running on that. Like, we built yep. some protection in now, right?
Yes, we did. So you're exactly right. So let's talk about what first the recommended way is to do it. So anytime you're going to, I'll show you. So I can show you as we're doing this here. So if you're going to go, let's say you're going to power down a node. So what you're going to do is you're going to gracefully drain that node. So you're going to say, let's identify all the virtual machines running on that node. Let's live migrate them off somewhere else. So you can do that pretty easily. So you can just go in here, you can right click on a node, and you can just do a pause, and you can do drain roles. And so what that will do is that'll identify all the virtual machines running on the node, and it will live migrate them off somewhere else. It'll pause it so nothing else moves back to it. So that's what you should always do.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you forget. So what we've done is this, what you're talking about, we built in safety mechanisms. And that's exactly what this is. So let's imagine it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you need to power down a node, you usually drain it, but you forgot. So in 2012, what would happen is that all those VMs would then shut down and move somewhere else. But shutdown equals downtime.
Downtime.
So that's bad. So what we've done is we're trying to protect the admins from themselves. So now if you do a shutdown, we will then go, whoa, you got some VMs running here. Let's drain those off for you. And the goal is we deliver zero downtime. So we're trying to protect you. But again, I still want to say you should still do a drain node. This is just a safety mechanism. This is like the safety on the gun. Still don't point it at yourself.
Okay. So. Sounds good. Now, as we talk about live migrations as well, we want it to be, I guess, a little more resilient as we're actually moving these VMs to different destination hosts. What additional best practices did we build with that?
So there's a couple things we've done around kind of validation. So let me talk, one of the things that we've done is around, we've built in health checks for the networking of virtual machines.
Okay.
So take this scenario, for example. If you were to walk up and pull the network card, the network cable out of the front of your Hyper-V server with, let's say, 2012, well, what would happen is all those virtual machines would just stay there happily running, but nobody could get to them. So effectively, you were down, right?
Mm-hmm. Disconnected, isolated. Yep.
Disconnected, isolated. All those VMs are running, but nobody can get to them. So we've added actually component health detection in 2012 R2. So now if you go up and you pull that network cable out, or you trip over it in the data center, or you plug into the wrong port, we will then go and identify all the VMs that were running on there, and then we'll move them off. And if possible, we'll do a live migration. So normally you have multiple redundant network connections. We will actually go and do a live migration and seamlessly drain them off if possible. And if not, we'll do a quick migration and move them off. So the first thing is that we have all this component health detection, so we'll give better resiliency. We've also added a lot of health detections within the components to make sure that things are running before we move them over.
So like, what's an example of that?
So we've done like health detection of the different services. So like,
so you don't want to move it to a host that has a service that's crashed that you're going to need.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. Now, final thing, you know, I know everyone's going to want to upgrade as soon as possible. What's our upgrade story moving from, I guess, both from 2008 R2 to 2012 R2, and then also 2012 to 2012 R2?
Yeah, so actually the story is about the same. So the story hasn't really changed. Effectively, the really powerful thing is that now you can actually do a live migration. So let's back this up. So what you can do is you can do a live migration between clusters, and we have the power to do live migration between different versions of clusters. So effectively what you do is, let's take that 16-node cluster. So what you'll do is you have your 16-node Hyper-V cluster, you'll evict a couple nodes of it, you'll rebuild them to Windows Server 2012 R2, and then you'll effectively have two clusters in parallel next to each other. And then what you'll do is you just do a live migration from one to the other one, and you'll just live migrate across the two. And you'll be able to do that with zero downtime and seamlessly across.
And then destroy the old cluster, add those nodes
back, so you'll,
rebuild
and you'll do like two nodes, and then you'll
gradually shift them over.
And then you'll drain some nodes over, some VMs over, and then you'll drop out a couple more nodes, bring them over, add them to the 2012 R2, bring a few more VMs with you, and you just kind of slowly do it in kind of this, we call it like a swing cluster, a swing migration, where you're actually just moving slowly over time from one to the other one.
Nice. Now, what if they're going from an older version, 2008 R2 to 2012 R2? What's in the copy cluster role wizards? That now supports Hyper-V, right?
Yep. So we have a built-into failover cluster manager here. I can show you it. So if you go here into failover cluster manager, and I can go where copy cluster roles. So if I go copy cluster roles, it is a wizard. And what it will do is that it will, you basically point it at your old cluster, which can be two versions back, and then you can point it, and then you have your current version. And what it will do is it will go and analyze everything running in there and copy the configuration state from the old cluster over to the new one. And then you can effectively just shut down all the virtual machines and move them over. So the trade-off is that it allows you to go farther versions back, but you can't do it with zero downtime. So that's the trade-off. So you can't do the live migration, zero seamless move over, but it is a tool built in that'll do it in an automated fashion.
Nice.
Make it easy.
And one of the things I want to note as well, it allows you to remap your networks as well. So if you have virtual network one on host one, virtual network two on host two.
Didn't you work on this feature?
Yeah, I may have done.
I was wondering why you were asking about it.
So that definitely exists. You get to remap your virtual networks. And so as we actually do this migration, it will actually go update the VM's configuration file, change all of those virtual networks.
So you know more about it than I do.
I do, but you know, you're the guest here. I can't interview myself. That wouldn't be too much fun. Oh, with that, thanks for coming on. That was a really great overview. But where can people kind of go to learn more about these features as well?
So we've done a number of presentations at Tekken, and those are all available online on Channel 9. So if you want to go learn about, we got one that does a feature overview on all the new features. We've got some on all the networking. So we actually have some drill down
ones. Upgrading as well.
Yeah, we have an entire session on upgrading. So if you really want to learn about upgrading, we have an entire 1 hour Tekken session up there to go watch about upgrading. The cluster blog, so we're also putting out lots of content on the cluster blog. What other things are there?
TechNet and just TechNet in general, right?
In general, yep. Sure, yes.
So lots of resources, and we'll go add them to the bottom of this page as well. Well, Eldon, thanks for joining me. Really appreciate it. And great job, man. This team's doing awesome, you know. Like
you
have such awesome guys behind you.
Are you just saying that because I'm not even your boss anymore? You're not supposed to say this stuff. Okay.
I can stop sucking up now, right? Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week.